Welcome back to No Thank You Next. I'm Megan and I talk about true crime stories that happen while dating.
And I'm Rachel and I talk about true crime stories that happen while married. Welcome Ta-da. Back.
It's like magic.
We made back. It. I know. Poof. Da-da-da. My jazz hands.
Yeah. That's what I thought you were going to start doing. Gosh.
That's like, can't copyright anything. I'm afraid to like sing a song.
Oh yeah, you can't. Yeah, gotta be careful. Gotta be careful.
Gotta be careful. Gotta watch out. Gotta be careful. Couple of Rain Men over here.
Oh my god.
Gotta be careful. Can't talk about it. Can't talk about it. Gotta be careful. Gotta be careful. Gotta be careful. Gotta be careful. It's true. It's true. It's true. All good right. Story. Well. I have a topic, a quick topic, because my story is kind of long. But I watched probably the saddest documentary I have ever seen, ever. Guys, it's called Dear Zachary. Came out a while ago, and it's horrible. It will make you cry, even if you are just like a stone. Cold-hearted
it's bitch.
I don't know,
so it's just
or yeah it, I watched it with my husband's like he's like tearing up.
Yeah,
it's so sad. So it basically is a true crime story. It's based in like Newfoundland, and like they deal with like Canadian laws, which is kind of crazy. So this Zachary, or no, it's his father Andrew. It's such a crazy, twisted, like, way that this whole thing happened. Yes. So this guy, Andrew, who's super smart, like, in, like, this hospital residency program, like, he's doing surgical stuff, and then he ends up going towards more, like, the family route. He's loved by everybody, and he has a friend who was, like, kind of like a wannabe filmmaker and loved to make videos with his friends, and he would like write out the scripts, and Andrew was always a part of that. Andrew ended up meeting this woman, Sandra, and they had like a really big age difference between the two of them. Like he was like in his 20s and she was in his 40s, I believe. And she had kids from previous marriages, and they started dating. And then she started to kind of get like clingy and weird with him, and was just like, would call him, not even like, oh, she called me like 5-10 times. Like, no, she called me like 100 to 200 times, would leave crazy voicemails on my answering machine. Like she was just obsessive, crazy.
Reminds me of Jodi Arias.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Her behavior is a lot like Jodi Arias, where, if she didn't get a reply from him, she would just become obsessive in wanting to get a reply and would do anything that she could. She just harass him. Basically, he ended up breaking up with her and put her on a plane, and she went home. She lived, you know, like 1600 miles away or something like that. Like she lived far, 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 far away, like 1300 miles. It's a long distance. He got home and she kept calling him, and she ended up driving like 16 hours after she got off of her flight. She drives to his house, says she wants to talk to him, and they agree to meet up the next day. Andrew is talking to one of his friends and he's like, hey, don't meet up with her. This behavior is erratic. Like if she shows up at my front door, I'm sneaking out through the back door and I'm calling the police. And Andrew is just super nice, and he just doesn't think that he needs to treat her this way. He's just like, no, she's upset about the breakup. Like, we'll work through it. And his friend was like, okay, like meet me at my house after you're done talking to her. We'll have a couple beers and you can tell me everything that you guys talk about. Well, Andrew never shows up. And it turns out that Sandra shot him and killed him. She murdered him in cold blood. She had the weapon. She was contacted by police and just kept giving him the runaround on what was going on. And Andrew's parents are hurt and upset. and furious with this woman that she would do this to their son. There are so many people who were affected by his death. It was just completely unfair that this woman just went off the rails and did this to him. Turns out she's pregnant with Andrew's son. And they find this out like 4 months later. And like the Canadian government, she just like wowed these judges. And even though she had committed murder, she was like allowed out on bail and she could have killed again. And everyone was questioning why in the, like, who is the system trying to protect by letting this woman out free? Like, this is nuts. And then she would gaslight the parents of Andrew about wanting to see the grandbaby. They wanted to get a paternity test to make sure it was actually Andrew's. And after that, it just gets so fucking sad. This woman, I mean, you can read about it, but this woman ends up, oh God, I was sobbing. Yeah. So trigger warning here. But the woman ended up having the baby. He was alive for, I don't know, 4 months, 6 months, maybe. Maybe it was even longer than that. I feel like he got older. And the whole like Dear Zachary thing, the baby's name after he was born was named Zachary. And the friend who was the filmmaker was like, hey, I'm going to compile all of these stories and bonus footage of your dad. So that way, you know, the man who is no longer here. Like, here we go. This very is heartfelt. How you can get to know him. It was very, very heartfelt. But then something happened and Sandra was like, rejected by the family. The family was very, very cautious about how they went about business with her. And it got so bad that she ended up killing Zachary and killing herself and jumped into the fucking ocean. And just, it was just so shocking and absurd. And the poor parents, the family that was just like
the last piece of Andrew that they had.
Yeah. And it was all they wanted, and they got custody of the baby, but then with custody of the baby while she was in prison, she like manipulated the system in that sense. And then she was able to get full custody of the baby once she got back out. And then the grandparents are like, okay, we got to figure out how we can get this baby back into our lives and away from her. Like, she's dangerous. And they knew how dangerous she was because she killed their son. Yeah. But she was free. It blew my mind. The legislative process that is, you know, being changed by the grandparents wanting to find justice for people. Like, if you murder somebody, like, that's it, you're done. You don't get custody of anybody and you need to stay in prison until a sentence can be figured out.
It doesn't matter if she's not allowed to go out on bail. Yeah. Like, if the evidence proves that she's not going to harm other people, she just was going to harm him. Like, that doesn't matter.
Yeah. And the judge was like, no, she had intent and she followed through her intent, but she promised she's never going to do it again. So I'm going to go ahead and let her out. It like kind of reminded me of the judge with Ted Bundy, how the judge was like completely taken with Ted Bundy and was like, if there were different circumstances, I would love to have you on a member of my staff. I would love to have you work for me. Like, you're very intelligent. And it's like, he has murdered so many people and you're wowed by his charm and the way that he can make it seem like he has control when you, the law, you are supposed to be the one in control. Mm-hmm. It was just so heart-wrenching, so awful, but you just hear about, you know, the family that loved him. And it really just brings you back into the perspective of how much we really are on the victim's side of things. Yeah. And we talk about stuff that's super, super dark, you know, every episode, basically. Yeah,
of course.
But, oh God, it was so heartbreaking. I mean, it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, for sure.
See how the laws were changed and just get you in a different, like, true crime aspect. But it is.
Yeah.
That was really fucking sad. Yeah, it was tough. It was tough to watch, but there you get a sense of like, okay, things have been put into motion. It wasn't all for nothing. Because laws are being changed, rules are being changed.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is how it should have been in the first place, but
fucking sometimes Canadians,
I just need a little push. It just, Oh God.
They're too nice, eh?
They're too nice.
They're too nice. They try to rebuild. They try to rehabilitate them and let them out so they can go and be citizens.
I know. It's like, it's a great gesture, a great idea, but there's a lot of them idea. That shouldn't be.
Bad execution.
Yes. Terrible, terrible execution.
You know what? I'm going to tell you guys at the end. Because I have a show that will cheer you up, and that's the perfect time to tell you. I remembered as you were talking, and I was like, wait, I forgot about this one show that I watched that was so silly and so amazing. But cliffhanger. Cliffhanger. I'm going to tell you at the end.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for my last recommendation of the day.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, because my story... It's a bit rough, and it just, these fucking people, it boggles my mind when I find these stories about a couple who both agree. Like, it's not just one person that they're like, man, you crazy, but it's both of them who believe the only way out of their situation is to kill it. Literally. Like,
is it like
one person,
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, is that what it's called? Where they're just trying to murder each other.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh God, you guys, no.
I just imagine.
That's not how you handle your life problems.
Like, one's like coming in with poison, and then the other one's coming in with poison. They're like, what? I was going to do it first.
Sorry. Try again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Try to surprise you. But yeah, it's like one person doesn't have the common sense to step away from the situation and go, maybe we shouldn't do this, and like either remove themselves from committing a horrific crime, or like try to talk the other person out of it, or notify somebody like, hey, this person is planning on doing something really fucking awful. Maybe you should check on them.
Yeah.
Step in, do something.
I don't know. Anything.
Something. And how do these people keep ending up together? They're like, yeah, you want to commit murder? Yeah, I totally want to. It's like, how did you guys... why did the universe put you guys together?
Yeah, for real. I always do wonder that. Like, what does it take? Because I don't know a single person I could be like, so let's go fucking murder someone. And they'd be like, yeah. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm a single on board. Person.
Tell me when and where. Yeah. It's just like, how did we get that far?
Maybe my mom.
She'd be like, whatever you need, honey. Whatever you need.
Let's go. What do you need? Let's go. That's the only person I think.
That's it. So needless to say, today's episode obviously includes murder, but it also includes dismemberment. Oh. Like, these people just went way too far. Oh, luckily, justice was swift in finding and convicting the killers, but it still doesn't bring back the innocent life that was taken from these families who are deeply impacted. I introduce you to Amanda Smith. She was born in 1972. Her dad worked at a power plant, and his particular job kept the family moving from home to home. Like, they bounced around a lot. They moved around a lot, almost like military kid style. Mm-hmm. The life Amanda was living was not what her dreams were made of. And she had big plans of wanting to get out of her small town and become a famous actress. While she was busy dreaming, she met a truck driver named Scott Elmer, and they were in love. Oh my God, they were just so in love. They got engaged when she was 16 and he was 20.
Oh God.
I don't know how her parents were okay with the
80s.
Yeah. Yikes. So like still like against the law, like not allowed to do that.
100%. Her parents
were fine with the scenario, which is odd in my eyes. So she got permission from her parents to be married, and she got the wedding of her 16-year-old dreams.
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh because I don't know who dies, but seriously, like if I had a like my wedding at 16 would have been like
it's just awful. It would have just been awful. I had it at the roller rink. That's what would have happened. Yeah.
At my local Regal party room. The Regal theater party room. It's too specific. Oh my God.
We're going to cut the cake and then we're going to go watch a movie. Yay!
My favorite.
If you want anything from the party, go to this concession stand because it's prepaid.
Dessert is the candy at the concession stand.
Throwing popcorn as they leave the aisle.
Like. Oh my God. You walk down the theater aisle. Oh my God. Yes.
All right.
So much. It's happening. That's my 30s wedding.
That's it. Oh my God. It's so perfect. I love it. It's so good. Well, after Amanda and Scott celebrated their wedding, they were just real quick to want to start a family. And at age 16, Amanda got pregnant and she gave birth to their daughter at 17. And with young couples and getting married and pregnant a little bit too soon, it turns a little volatile and they ended up getting divorced when Amanda turned 20. So not too soon after the divorce, Amanda met a man named Nicky Smith, who was nearly 20 years older than her. Mm. So age ain't nothing but a number. Go for gold. Do what you want. I married an older man.
Unless you're 16. Older,
so. I know. Exactly. Luckily, she's 20 by this point. But Nicky, he's super, super successful. I think that he had his hand in the entertainment industry of some sort, and it made it so Amanda and her daughter never had to worry about money again. Like they were set for life. They were good.
Nice.
Unfortunately, that all changed on Memorial Day in 2000. Nicky was paralyzed after diving into a shallow lake water, and he died shortly after.
No.
Yeah. It was super,
terrible.
It's so awful. It's so awful.
Never dive into things. I don't care if it's 1,000 feet. Why are we diving?
No diving.
Just in the Olympics. That's it.
Very, very, very sad. And Amanda, she was completely, completely crushed. Like, this was the love of her life.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
No one wants to be widowed that young. Like you think you have your whole life, you know, to create memories with this person. It's just so sad. Amanda received quite a bit of inheritance, which gave her financial freedom, and she was basically set for life. Like this man had a lot of money.
Oh, geez.
She decided that to pull herself out of her depression, she wanted to just start living life. It's what Nikki would have wanted. So she scooped up her daughter and they moved to New York City, and she wanted to dip her toe into acting. It was always her job or her dream when she was younger. So here we go. She actually got small parts in like the OC and the Sopranos and like other films. It's funny because I looked her up on IMDb and she's not really like named for her roles. But she had small parts in these shows, which are big shows.
That's so cool.
And so she did acting for about 6 years. And in 2007, Amanda and her daughter decided to take a break from busy New York City, and they moved to St. John Virgin Islands in the Caribbean. You say Caribbean or Caribbean?
If I was talking about the Pirates of the Caribbean, I think I always say Caribbean.
I say Caribbean.
I went on a Caribbean cruise.
But if I'm talking about Pirates of the Caribbean.
See?
It's the only way that I'll say it, though, is if I'm talking about the movie. But it's like, oh, have you been to the Caribbean? Like, I would.
Yeah, I went on a Caribbean cruise. Did you go to the Caribbean? No, I would ask if they went to the Caribbean, but then I would ask how their Caribbean cruise was. But if I went to the ride, it was Pirates of the Caribbean.
Exactly.
I'm very flexible.
It's very fluid.
Yes, exactly.
At least people know what you're talking about regardless of how you pronounce it.
Yes.
So that's a plus. Amanda still looked for work while she was at St. John's, but there was slim to no work. And it left her a little depressed, and she also wanted love in her life. She had been working for 6 years. You know, she was ready to kind of get back in the swing of things. Being widowed left a hole in her heart. She was ready to find someone new. And one night while she was at a bar, she you know, knew that there was a live band playing. So she went, got her drink, got a table, watched the band. And as she got more and more into the groove of the music, she also found herself eyeing the singer and the guitar player like, ew. Hey, what's up? Mm-hmm. What's your name? Well, his name is Grant Hayes. Mm. Grant seemed to really like the attention of this woman, and he thought she was hot. He had a mutual attraction to her. So Grant Hayes, he was born in 1979 in Raleigh, North Carolina. He was similarly a very big dreamer. He always wanted to grow up and be a famous musician. He played guitar, and once he was able to get his foot in the door in the nightclub scene, he was one of the best singer-songwriters out there. He had a following, he had some groupies, lots of ladies loved him, including a woman named Laura Ackerson. Grant and Laura, they had that spark between one another. They began seriously dating, and within a few years, they had two kids together. Eventually, Grant would go on and play gigs, but some nights he wouldn't bring home any money at all. Like, there were people who were like, cool, live band, but like, they didn't really like dig the music he was playing. Mm-hmm. He played like folk reggae music, and ew. North Carolina wasn't really like his scene anymore. Yeah. So he's like, I gotta find some new listeners. Yeah. I gotta go somewhere where my audience will enjoy my sound. So in 2009, he moved his family to St. John's Virgin Islands in the Caribbean.
just all of it.
Yeah. His music was the perfect fit for the islands. So he got a new fan base. Everyone like wanted to come see him. They would pay him for gigs. But even though they were living in a paradise, Grant and Laura's relationship was anything but. Laura made the decision after a while to move back to North Carolina with the kids, and she was not about to let Grant sway her decision. She wasn't going to stay. It wasn't for her. She's like, nope, I'm out. Oh, wow. So the situation, so Grant was like super upset over the whole situation, but he had gigs and he had money lining up, and that's why he decided to stay and follow his dream. And that is when he met Amanda Smith at the bar that night. So Grant and Amanda, they're absolutely infatuated with each other. Grant introduces himself to Amanda at the bar when his gig is over, and there is just instant attraction. Amanda asked Grant to teach her how to play guitar as a way to get to know him and get close to him. And when he would come around for guitar lessons, they very quickly started up a romantic relationship. Like, sure, like wink, wink, nudge, nudge, guitar lessons. Their relationship blossomed. Things were going great. And Grant soon shared that, you know, he had two kids and she had a daughter from a previous relationship, and he wanted to move to the next phase. And he basically proposed to her, like, so infatuated with what they had going on. And he's just like, yeah, I'm ready. This feels right. In 2010, Grant made up his decision, and he's like, hey, I want to fight for custody for my sons. So a mutual decision was made to move the family back to the States from St. John's Virgin Islands. They move in around April of 2010, and Amanda and Grant, they go to Vegas with their kids and they get married in Las Vegas. They're like super excited that they tied the knot. They're moving forward. You know, they never lost sight for, you know, fighting for custody. They just were really happy with, you know, planning their future together. Mm-hmm. And about after a year, Grant was finally granted custody. He was able to show that he could provide for his kids while his ex Laura was having a hard time keeping her head above water. Mm-hmm. She couldn't really keep a job or have steady income. So financially, it was a better decision for the kids to be with their dad. Soon thereafter, the couple learns that Amanda is pregnant, and they're thrilled about their family growing. And it just seems like a fairy tale coming true for them. All the pieces are just falling into place. Mm-hmm. In the summer of 2011, they welcome their daughter into the world. While the Hayes family is living on cloud nine, there is some other news going on with Laura. July 18th, 2011, Laura's friend and coworker calls the police and reports her friend missing because she hadn't heard from her for 5 days. And she was worried because this isn't typical Laura behavior. Days before, on July 13th, Laura met her friend at a restaurant and told her friend that she was going to Raleigh, North Carolina to pick up the kids on a Wednesday. But normally the exchange of kids between Grant and Laura happens on Fridays. So it was like, why are you going there in the middle of the week? Like, that's weird. They also usually meet in a very public place on Friday afternoons, but Laura was planning on going straight to Grant's home. Detectives head to Grant's apartment after hearing about this, but there's no answer. So they call him and Grant's like, hey, I'm traveling. I don't really have good reception to talk, but detectives just ask anyway. They're like, hey, we wanted to come by to see you. You weren't home. Do you when was the last time you talked to Laura? And he was like, yeah, you know, she came by. She said she wanted to pick up the kids, but it turned out she just wanted to come and talk because she actually wants to relinquish custody of the kids. Like, having the kids is too much on her. She is super stressed out about trying to find consistent work. And then he's like, we just agreed, you know, me and my wife, Amanda, we're going to give Laura $25,000 and we're going to take full custody even on the weekends. And then Laura is just going to go and like try to get her shit together and try to relieve some of the stress that she was having about having to take care of the kids on the weekends. So allegedly it was a group decision. They were just trying to figure out what was going to be the best for their kids. And that was it. That was their decision.
I smell fish. And
exactly. Grant and Amanda didn't know where Laura went after she left their place. After they had the whole conversation, they gave her the check, Laura left, and that was that. They figure, you know, she's heading home. After searching the area, police officers locate Laura's car 7 days later, parked at an apartment complex in downtown Raleigh with her purse inside the car. And the apartment complex where they found her car was right next to the apartment complex where Amanda and Grant were living at. So they're like, this is suspicious. Now police are thinking that Grant is lying to them. Like, where's Laura? Did she actually come by your house regarding the kids? Like, what happened to her? Where did she go? There wasn't any sign of foul play or any forensics evidence to help lead detectives to find Laura. So they decide to question the people who knew her. Laura's friend Heidi is contacted and asked by police if there's anyone out there who would want to harm her. Heidi said on multiple occasions, Laura told her if she went missing, was in a car accident, committed suicide, or anything that resulted in her being harmed or killed, it was Grant who did it. Laura feared for her life because of Grant. She was afraid of him and had been for quite some time. In their relationship, Grant was very threatening, controlling, and abusive. While he was playing in bars and nightclubs in Raleigh, Grant would become unstable because of his drug use. He had paranoid thoughts often and was prone to angry and unpredictable outbursts. Wow. He wasn't exactly a joy to be around. He would bully Laura, gaslight her, would cheat on her, which I'm sure is what gave her a good reason to just take her kids and leave his ass. Laura was determined to get her kids back because she was worried about their safety. Heidi said Laura would never, ever give up custody of her kids for any amount of money. Laura was doing her best to get her life together to prove to the judge that she is an outstanding, stable mother in order to get custody back of her sons. There was even a custody hearing coming up on August 15th, 2011, but Laura went missing a month prior. Laura kept journals in her home about her custody battle and all of her feelings towards Grant, which was mostly negative. Yikes. The journals, like with the journals, after investigating, they found that there was a report from a court evaluator who visited Laura in her home because they're like, okay, are these kids safe? Are they happy? Are they healthy? Can you buy them groceries? Like, whatever the thing is they need to put in their report, they're at the home to put it all down. And they found plenty of reasons why Laura was fit to have custody, and even more reasons of why Grant shouldn't have custody of his kids, which included substance abuse and mental health issues. Turns out that Laura was actually making a steady income, and Grant and Amanda were nearly broke. They had completely drained Amanda's inheritance from her previous marriage to Nikki.
Oh, shit.
All of these red flags are popping up, and soon detectives come to realize that there was no $25,000 payment to Laura. They don't have the money to give her. That didn't happen. Police go back to visit and question Amanda and Grant, but they couldn't get a hold of them at home or on the phone. So investigators make quick work and they begin tracking their phones. And the last signal ping from their phones was 1,200 miles away in Texas. Like, they live in North Carolina. What are they doing in Texas? Yeah. Now it looks like they're fleeing. Like, what are they doing? Richmond, Texas was the last cell phone ping, and the only person they knew in Texas was Amanda's sister. Detectives arrive and interview the sister, Karen, who told them, Grant and Amanda, they're not here. You just missed them. They're already headed back to North Carolina. But she did say that they showed up unannounced a week prior to give her a dresser that was a family heirloom, but the whole situation didn't quite sit right with Karen. She begins to cry while talking to detectives and asks if it's all right to pray. She said on July 18th, her sister and Grant show up. They move the dresser out of the moving truck, and that's when Karen notices that there's coolers in the back of the moving truck. Amanda and Grant begin asking strange questions like, hey, are there any alligators out here? Does Texas have alligators? If you do, like, are they at this local creek? And do they eat things? Like people? Who the fuck asked those questions? Yeah. So on the second day of their visit, Karen's like, why are you asking me that? Like, that's doesn't sit right.
No.
So on the second day of their visit, they quote unquote went fishing in the middle of the night, and they took the coolers with them and they went to Oyster Creek. As soon as Karen tells them, you know, the creek that they went to, a dive team was immediately brought into the creek. And they start finding pieces of human remains in the water.
Oh, man.
Dental records confirm that it was, in fact, Laura's remains. And there was something else a little unsettling about finding her remains. Acid had been poured on them in hopes to, like...
Yeah.
There was a dirt road nearby the creek. And it's, like, kind of crazy, but, like, this dirt road had surveillance cameras. It's kind of random.
Chances?
I know. Thankfully, they were there. The surveillance cameras show Amanda taking body parts out of the cooler and dumping acid on them.
The acid
wasn't eating away the body as quickly as she thought it was, she wrapped them up. And then that's when they took them and they dumped the remains in Oyster Creek.
Oh my God.
Beyond fucked up.
Yeah.
Amanda and Grant Hayes are arrested for the murder of Laura Ackerson. The couple are questioned separately, but they stay completely tight-lipped and they won't reveal anything. There's no confession. There's no anything. It's just, nope, not talking.
They just roll in the VCR tape.
Yeah, they're like, like when you're at school on a rainy day. Well, yeah. As you see here, y'all are fucked.
Yeah, exactly.
Grant's trial begins in September of 2013, and he doesn't seem bothered, or he doesn't show any emotion in regards to Laura's death. Like, none. Jeez. Just chilling. Prosecutors say that Grant was upset with Laura, knowing that she would always be in the way of his life that he was trying to build with Amanda. Like, she would always be there whenever he would turn a corner, because she would never let him have sole custody of their sons without putting up a fight. And this angered him. So he came up with this plan to lure Laura into his home that Wednesday afternoon. And prosecutors believe that Grant strangled Laura the moment she walked into his house. Surveillance video shows Grant calmly walking through a hardware store that day looking for a saw. Laura was dismembered and her body was wrapped up and placed in coolers with Amanda's help. Once they finished, they drove 1,200 miles away to Texas to dump the body. They used the dresser as an excuse to travel, but they wanted to make sure that Laura's body would never be found in North Carolina. The physical evidence of Laura's remains and Sister Karen's police report made it seem like this is a very accurate depiction of what happened to Laura. If that doesn't get you to believe that these people are the killers, then this just might. So you know how Grant is a singer-songwriter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he wrote a little song called Broomstick Rider, and the lyrics are pretty shocking. His song was played in court, and the jury heard his lyrics of, quote, "Don't say I didn't warn you. I put a price tag on your head. My bullets will get you soon." And like Grant is like sitting in the court and he's like bobbing his head to the song being played in court. He's like, yeah, it's a good jam. Like,
ew, monster.
Disgusting, disgusting. His behavior was so odd and so cold. It just made everybody in the room uncomfortable.
Ugh.
His defense attorney says, Grant didn't kill Laura. Amanda killed Laura. His claim was that there was a heated argument between the women. They started fighting, pulling hair, and Amanda had elbowed Laura in the throat to get her off of her, but she did it so hard she accidentally crushed Laura's throat and then she suffocated. The defense stated that Grant went along with a plan to get rid of Laura's body because he was worried about his wife and their kids. He wanted to protect his wife and the life that they were creating. And he knew they just needed to get rid of the body. It was an accident. So he was doing whatever he could to protect his wife. He just tried to cover it up. But it wasn't him. It was Amanda who did it.
Mm.
Prosecutors won their argument. The jury deliberated. And all of the evidence that was presented just made Grant Hayes found guilty of first degree murder with no possibility of parole.
Good.
If you fast forward to January 2014, it's Amanda's turn to be prosecuted. Prosecutors show the hard evidence, which is the surveillance video of Amanda clearly pouring acid on Laura's body parts off of that beaten dirt path. Amanda took the stand in her defense and was either very open and honest or she was putting her acting skills to good use. She said that it was Grant who confronted Laura when she arrived at their home. Amanda is blatantly asked, "Did you kill Laura?" And she said, "No." Allegedly, there was an altercation between Grant and Laura, so she left the room while they fought. When she came back into the room, Laura was on the ground and Grant was standing over her, and he kind of panicked and he told her, you know, take the kids, get out of the house, go get something to eat. I am going to take Laura to the hospital. You know, everything's going to be just fine.
Right.
Well, during that time, Grant didn't go to the hospital. He went to the hardware store and bought a saw and came back to dismember Laura's body. Grant then drove himself and Amanda out to Texas, and he said he was going to dispose of Laura's body. Amanda said she was so scared of Grant and became worried that if she didn't comply, Grant was going to do something to her to the degree of what he did to Laura. Her story did not win over the jury. The evidence of her pouring acid on the remains did.
Yeah.
Exactly. Amanda is found guilty of second degree murder for her role in Laura's murder, and she is sentenced to 16 years in prison. And in 2018, she earned an additional 20-year sentence for tampering with evidence by trying to feed Laura's body to the alligators at Oyster Creek.
Fuck yeah.
Grant, his dumbass, tried to escape the correctional institute that he's in, but he got caught.
Oh my God, what an idiot.
Yes, it was just, it's ridiculous. And Amanda didn't think she was going to get that added sentence, but they tacked another 20 years to her. So
good.
They are both rotting in prison. And that is the true crime story about Laura Ackerson. May she rest in peace.
Wow.
That fucking is people.
So messed up. I honestly, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
When you were telling the story of, I thought that Amanda was going to be murdered and that Laura and Grant, they were separating, but that she was struggling and that he was going to tell her that they had money and then they were going to get together and murder her, because her story was so sad that her husband like just died like that. I was just like, this, oh my God. And then she ends up being a monster.
I know. Like, did I was like, change something in her head? Or yeah,
right? Because she had a child.
Yeah.
Like, to just ruin her whole life.
And they were and so to have in love.
Everything.
And to have everything and just be like, let's remove this one problem. She's just going to keep showing up. Why don't we just get rid of her? We already have the kids. You have your daughter. We made a daughter together. We've got our life. But they just thought that Laura was going to be like a sore that wouldn't go away. You know what I mean?
Ridiculous. Crazy.
It's so crazy. Yeah. And like for Amanda to have so much grief in her life by losing her husband.
Yes.
You would think that there's like no way. I would never put that on another woman, on another person, on another mom. I would not do that.
Yes.
And just another human. Like, don't do that.
I make
better choices.
Blown away.
That story shocked me. Yeah.
Yeah, does.
And then they turn on each other so quickly.
Yes.
As soon as they're arrested. No, he fucking did it. No, she fucking did it. You both did it. You both are pieces of trash.
Exactly. The trash took itself out.
See ya.
Done. All right.
Oh yeah. What's your pick me up? So,
I realize I have two. One, you're going to love, Rachel. It is the new show on Netflix about tattoo redos. It is, they have the most amazing artists.
Oh, that's so cool.
These people come in with crazy tattoos that they like got, whatever, they had like a lot, like they have crazy stories. A lover like had a tattoo gun. Some guy was at a party and a guy had a tattoo gun. One person was dared to get a tattoo. So, but they come in with someone that they love or care about. And then that person gets to pick what the tattoo cover up is. But it is, the host is so funny. I love her. She's a comedian. I think she was on Girl Code. And it is just, I wish there was like 100 episodes. Cause you know, like a lot of tattoo shows are about the drama of the tattooers and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
But this was just like so heartfelt. Like every person loved their tattoo redo. They were crying. Like it was just really, really. And the work is just like so fucking amazing that you're just like, how? Like how? So that's my one recommendation.
Do you know what's the name of it?
Tattoo redo.
Tattoo. Okay.
Yeah. Look it up. You're going to fucking love it. Like you got to watch it. You're going to love it. The second one, which you also would love, is Paris Hilton's cooking show.
Oh, what?
She is an angel and we must protect her at all costs. My favorite episode was Nikki Glaser's episode when she was told to grab a whisk and she did not know what a whisk was. And then the next scene was just a little like diorama. And then it was like a whisk in it. And she's like, for those of you who didn't know what a whisk was, this is what it is. Like it.
Yes, please. Oh my God.
It's so good. I didn't really watch the Kim Kardashian one yet. I haven't watched the Demi Lovato one because I cannot. But Nikki Glaser's was so good. Nikki and her mom were on it. That was really fun.
How cute. Yeah, I love so her. Her mom is so funny. She's on The Real Housewives now and she's fucking funny.
Yes.
I just love it. So, Cooking with Paris. How funny.
It's just it's a silly show that you can just, honestly, it's like so mindless, but it is, I just love Paris Hilton so much that truly she can do anything. Like it's like her in a grocery store with full glam being like, is this cilantro?
They're like, what? Like,
yeah.
What are you doing over here?
She is a treasure that we don't deserve.
Oh, so that's so cool.
Those are my recommendations to cheer y'all up because, man.
We need it after this episode. Yes. I'm so sorry I brought you all.
No, I was the Debbie Downer. No. That's why we're here.
And that's why you're here.
Yes. And Paris Hilton will bring us back to life. And that is the cycle of life.
That's so fun.
Yeah. Just watch it. You're going to love it. She decorates like her house is so beautiful. She films it in her house. It is during COVID. And she just redid her entire house. So it's like her kind of showing off her house at the same time.
Nice.
I just love her.
All good things. All good things.
Yeah. So enjoy. And we will see you guys next week for another horrible story.
Goodbye.